Okay, here we go then. Delighted to be here today with Sandra Harding and Sarah Tribe from PAL, and that will all be explained as to what that is and why we're here to talk about governance of all things. It's a really interesting story how I met these ladies, and they've managed to totally reform my thinking in this space, where I always considered governance to be an important foundational principle, and I've always had a bit of upset about how some of the things have been in yesteryear and some of the legacy things that don't seem to have been changed in time to mature the profession of physiotherapy, but also across healthcare. And so then when meeting them to see that we share some of those concerns, but also that they have a system and a knowledge base that can point to how we might improve those things was hugely reassuring. And also it didn't take many conversations between us for me to realise I needed to get them on the microphones to some extent and get this out to the world. Also, Sandra's contributing to the Big Ars conference in October as a critique of the governance chapter of the Manifesto for Reform, which is hugely exciting for that to be going through their filter, as well as all of the other work that's being done. So I'm really pleased to have them here today to talk all things governance. I'm going to throw it over to them to introduce themselves. Sandra, if you go first.
Hi all, I'd just like to say I'm Sandra Harding. I've been working with PAL and with Sarah since we started together in April 2017. Previously, I was leading a large national physio service across the UK, where we realised the importance of governance, the importance of providing evidence. And when we resigned from that role, it was really to start to help other physios share a little bit of the knowledge we'd gained and really help them understand what governance is about and how great the profession is and what they can do to show that. Hand over to Sarah.
Okay, so I'm Sarah Tribe, and while I was waiting for Sandra to finish as national lead, because we used to job share for a while, I actually went off and managed a care home. And so I really got to understand all about the CQC governance when I was doing that. And when I inherited it, it was requires improvement in all domains, and I managed to change it all to good. So I've got a real good handle on what the CQC expects in all of the key lines of inquiry in the domains. And as I said, we set this up in 2017, and we've been working together ever since.
Fantastic. So in terms of the story so far, and you can speak to this either as individuals or as a group, I'm sure those stories merge to some extent, but what's the background, both in terms of your professional background? I understand you're both physios,
yep,
but I don't necessarily know your whole sort of CV and back catalogue. So yep.
We're both physios. My background was MSK, where I've been involved in outpatients for a number of years, looked after some national sports teams, travelled abroad with teams, but most of my work was done in outpatient MSK practice.
And I was on inpatients, and my real interest was orthopaedic inpatients. And while I was working for the last company, I helped to drive the pre-admission policy and actually to try and reduce length of stay for hips and knees. So that's where my real love lies.
Right, okay. So that's the clinical background. Yeah. And so when did you...
Where do we get to this? Yeah.
Well, yeah.
We'll tell you the gap. We'll tell you about the gap, right. Ironically, we both decided to resign from our roles at the same time. So we thought the time was good to explore an idea that we had a couple of years ago. And so really what we wanted to do was we wanted to share our passion for really evidencing how good physio is. And it was based on a realisation in our previous roles that physios really didn't know what they didn't know about how to evidence governance. So we started to pull together all the evidence into a compact and clear format, which we linked to 13 of the 15 HCPC domains. That's because two of the domains are more around training. So obviously we didn't work on those, but we wanted to make sure we got the evidence that every physiotherapist should have when they sign the HCPC declaration that says they meet the standards. So I want you to consider, if there was an issue and you were legally tested, could you prove you meet the standards? So we're aware that many therapists gather outcomes and they get the outcome measures and they gather metrics around treatments, but we see that as kind of the restaurant part of the business. We see ourselves as the kitchen. We sit in the background, we look at the preparation, and we're there to make sure no one gets food poisoning. So if the restaurant is 5-star, you may get a quarter page promotion about how good you are. But if the kitchen fails and there's an issue and there's litigation, you may end up with the whole front page. Mm-hmm. It can then damage your brand, can hit your business hard. So we want to make sure that your kitchen's as good as your 5-star restaurant. And governance is all about service. And we'll, as we talk, I'm sure we'll define how we see service and how we've linked that to governance to try and make it a bit more sexy and interesting.
Right, okay. Yeah, looking forward to that for sure. Before we, I just want to make sure I don't miss a chapter. Then, was there an obvious point in either or both of your careers in which the clinical met the operational and the organisational and things like that?
I think when we were both working in our previous role, we kept the clinical skills up together. But actually, what we were seeing when we were going out and we were looking at other providers that we were going to work with, there was this big disjoint between what the standards said and what people actually did. And it was this lack of understanding that gave us a little bit of concern. And so when we decided, the time felt as though there's beginning to be a cultural change and it was time to move, we decided to take some time to pull all the standards in front of us and pull them into a tool to help physiotherapy move forwards when it comes to evidencing what they do.
So Sarah, as clinicians that were aspiring to accountability and trying to be the best you could be, as well as then managers that wanted to try and enact system level changes, did you feel that this system as it stood was something that was supportive of your ambitions in that direction, or something that was you had to build it from scratch?
We actually, as joint national lead for we looked after 1,000 physios, we actually built our own audit. Audit tool, which we kept refining and refining, sure. Which we used to take out to the managers and actually sit down with them and support them and help them to fulfil it all. So that the HCPC standards and regulations, I think we just put it into an easier format so right. That they could understand it.
Yeah, but the system as it stood, required you to have stepped up. Rather than it wasn't a standardised process that was going to hold your clinicians to account and you to account to a system, and which is why you described that you've set something up, but then you've also moved on to refining that.
We've changed the tool we had then, because for the high street and for the areas we're going for now, the thing that's important is that you can show you evidence the HCPC standards.
Right.
So we've developed a tool that is directly linked to those standards.
Okay, no, that's brilliant. So I'm interested to know as to whether or not your work into governance and audit and robust policy and the things that we've started to touch on there, and also I know your work a little more than the listeners at this stage, but by the end of the podcast they'll be well up to speed, is that I'm interested, is that from an interest in those things personally and professionally, or is it also mainly because of the importance of those topics for what you said, the scandal that could ensue if it went awry? So I just wondered which of those two variables.
I think it's a real interest in governance, and also I experienced the lack of governance and the lack of robust policies by visiting lots of different physio practices and seeing what they were missing. And also in my work in the hospital group, I was also did a lot of root cause analysis. So I had a lot of incidents they used to give them to me to investigate. So I'd do a thorough investigation and realise the importance of all the things that you should have in place. If you have most of them or all of them in place, it will really mitigate the risk of the things that happened. And for me, that was around, right, okay, so if your kitchen is really clean and safe, yeah, you're going to do the risks that you will do some damage in the restaurant will be much less.
Sure, of course. No, that makes sense. And does that speak to your take as well? Or
absolutely. I think there's, as we've said, you know, there's a bit of both of it, but it is absolutely about saying, are you safe? Have you got the right foundations on which you've built your clinical service? And we're about the foundations.
And so both of you had an interest. It wasn't just the fear of consequence.
No. We had a real interest.
We developed this because of the interest, you know.
We're both passionate.
Yeah. We both resigned from good roles to actually spend a year pulling things together for ourselves and spending money doing it. So there's definitely an interest Jack. Definite interest.
Good. I suppose that it's funny because I'd have been super surprised if you weren't, and I know how passionate you guys are about this. But I admit that my interest is, it's become an interest secondary to the...
Me
looking on at what, you know, my study of the underlying structures and my experience within a system to think, well, what hold, as I'm realizing, what is holding me to account? How much is based on good faith and a tick in a box? And then that fear of consequence is what then drove my interest, which is interesting. So I that's one of the reasons for me asking. I know we will come to that, but would your interest have been sufficient an interest to do what you've done if there were really good underlying structures that you were in just refining rather than overhauling?
Yes, it would still have been there because it comes back to the same thing. Physios, what we're finding, our experience was physios didn't know what they didn't know. Sure. So it's that piece about us giving back a bit of what we've both learned to help other people evidence, because it's a great profession. We don't want to trip up.
Yeah, sure. Lovely. So... in terms of the governance and sort of it's how it's seen in not just the profession but in healthcare in general, then how would we say that governance could become more sexy? How might we better introduce it?
What we like to think is, if you think of governance about service, because that fits into our analogy of the restaurant, the kitchen. So if you look at the word service instead of the word governance, we see service as being, are you safe? Are you ease? Are you evidence-based? Are you responsive? V, are you valid? I, are you innovative? C, are you caring? And E, are you effective? And can you evidence all these things? And so while we're saying it isn't sexy, why isn't it sexy? Why is service not sexy? Service is about giving the best you can to the people that you serve. So surely wanting to give great service should be part of what we are. And we see governance as the whole piece about giving that great service. It struggles because when you're trying to make it robust, it takes time and that can have a cost. But also we feel it struggles a little bit because people don't understand what it means. And so the fear bit comes in. If they think about it being service, being this safe, evidence-based, responsive, etc., then actually it's a better understanding. People also sometimes don't like to discover what they've got to put in place. And we also think there's a bit of a fear around it because of the not knowing what you don't know. But if you're treating the public, and that's what we are doing, then why wouldn't you want to give the best service that you can? And by getting your governance right, it enhances you giving great service. So that's how we would like to look at it and think of it more as a service. Many of these things are done. Many physios do lots of it. They just can't evidence it. So there's a little piece of the jigsaw missing. And so what we're saying is, we're here to help you document the stuff that you're doing so you've got the evidence, and thereby we'll try and remove some of the fear and make it a bit more sexy at the same time.
Sure. Okay. Now, with that then, whilst especially with you having that mnemonic that certainly we can share with everyone as to how to break that down. But I'm wondering then, is it a necessity then to move away from the term governance? Is that because you're thinking that it can't be rehabilitated? It's something that can't become, it's got so much baggage that it can't be sexy in itself. So even in answering my question, you've had to do a bit of a sleight of hand in saying, this is a better way to understand it.
Yep.
Or do you think that by understanding it as service, using mnemonics like that, we can sort of rehabilitate the term governance?
Yeah, I think exactly what you've just said, Jack, because I think for some people, it's difficult to understand what governance really is. So we've tried to turn its head a little bit, and hence talk more about the restaurant, the kitchen analogy and the service analogy, so that people begin to understand, you know, governance as well. The other difficult thing that we find is governance means so many different things to different people, depending who you're talking to. But to us, the fundamentals are, is it safe, evidence-based, responsive, etc.? And that's at the heart of what it's about.
Okay, that makes sense. Now, in terms of the specifics of getting people interested in governance, can we then think why they might not be? So why is it that it needs to be made more sexy or rehabilitated or whatever the terms that I've used are? What are sort of common misconceptions, or what's the baggage it carries as a term?
I think it's fear, a lot of it, and I think physios understand clinical outcomes, they understand how to treat patients, they're very good physiotherapists, but they don't. And if they're going into private practice, they want to know how to run a business, what the how the finances will work, how they're going to get patients, how they're going to get referrals. But they don't take any time to actually set up their practice right from the bottom up. They go into it, start treating patients, sort out the finances, and then they never probably have to think about governance at all if they don't want to. But if they want to offer a service that is competitive and that makes them stand out and makes them excellent, they need to be thinking about all the standards and regulations. For example, do they have an informed consent policy, and do they understand what gaining informed consent actually means? And it is there, we also have in the HCPC regulations and standards that you have to offer a chaperone. So have they thought about that? Have they just set up and then think, oh, chaperones, gosh, how am I going to do that? So it's talking about growing it from the bottom up. Get all your governance in place, then sort out your business, then sort out your referrers, etc. But they want to get in and sort all that out first, and then the other bit seems to just get missed in the mix.
And is it harder to do then after the fact?
Is it harder to do? It forms the basis of what they should be doing. It's like it should come at the beginning. It's no good having your patients coming in, treating them, and not gaining informed consent.
Sure.
So it's like it's too late, really. By the time you're thinking about it, it's too late. You've got to have got these policies and processes in place, which is not sexy, which is not they want to be out there treating patients and being the really good physios they are, but they just need to spend some time on this other bit that we are calling service.
Takes more time if you're doing it later,
sure,
because you're playing catch up.
Right.
If you get it there from the beginning, you build a culture around it, and so actually it almost becomes self-perpetuating.
Yeah.
Well, you're not going to get that if you're playing catch up.
So I've been using the analogy, I think I already have on this podcast, but certainly in our previous conversations off air, I've mentioned the fact that it's talking about foundations. But if I was to, it's probably an imperfect analogy, because you can't lay the foundations of a building that exists, in a sense that you need to. It's better as say scaffolding or something like that.
We're the scaffolding.
That would make more sense, wouldn't it? But it definitely would, I agree, be easier from the off.
Yep.
And then afterwards it's more challenging, but still it's not as if all is lost. So established practices and businesses and frameworks and services are in a situation where they can retrofit.
Absolutely. Yes, yes, completely.
It's not just about getting it right first time.
No.
There are also
it's easy. It's like everything. It's usually easier first time, but it doesn't mean it can't be done later.
Sure.
It's just knowing where to start.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Is there a perception or naivety amongst physios and therapists generally that they are compliant with governance even when they aren't? And if yes, why is that?
I think that they do think that they are compliant because they have signed that box every 2 years to say that they do adhere to all the standards and regulations. And I don't think they do it out of thinking, well, I don't really understand it, but I'll take it anyway. I think they genuinely think that they are, but you can very quickly go down and drill down and find that actually they don't understand it. We do we do some training with physios, and we get everyone to stand up, and we say I go through all of the regulations, and I say stay standing if you have got the insurance to be able to practice, and there are several things, and the last one that you sign on the HCPC is to say that you meet all their standards and regulations, and then everybody sits down. We haven't met anybody that stays standing. So physios then go, maybe I don't.
Yeah.
And eventually everyone in the room is back in their chair.
Yeah.
And we've still got some questions spare, but
everyone's
in their seat.
I bet, yeah. And obviously, for the sake of exercise, you could front end those and set everyone down very sharpish, couldn't you?
Yeah.
It's not as if it's not the fine print that sits down.
So, we've never needed to go to the fine print.
So with that then, what's your hot take on what you think is a core variable or a few variables that are making that a reality? Is it a complacency? Is it as just crossing our fingers? Is it as hoping it doesn't go away? Is it because culturally we're so used to just ticking a box because we're obliged to be able to go to work the next day? So every 2 years we just do that. Like, what do you think is the driving reason for that naivety, as I described it?
I think the main barriers and how we might overcome them, there's only a few barriers really. And there's a main two that Sarah and I find is lack of understanding and lack of external checking. So the time carries a cost, as we've said, but once things are in place and it becomes self-perpetuating and people understand it and you create that culture with governance as its heart, you can move forwards. But it's that lack of understanding, and that because there's no external check, people kind of don't really think about what they need to do, because no one's coming in to check what they're doing. So I think that does hold things back.
Yeah. And so would you, because that you've mentioned two key variables there.
Yeah.
Would you, if I forced your hand on it, would you be able to lean more on one than the other?
I would say the lack of understanding.
Lack of understanding.
Because I think people genuinely sign the form, as Sarah said, thinking that they do know the standards and they can evidence them. But there's this, when we go out and we start talking to people, they'll often say, oh, I never thought of it like that. And actually, that is what it's asking me. Mm. And it's that level of detail that people don't go into, because, as we say, they don't go into the fine print, because they just skim the surface, think we're okay, and we'll be able to tick the box.
But if there were external checks, would that raise the understanding?
I think, yeah.
The external checks are what will... it will really drive good practice to be externally checked.
Because there'll be less excuses to not understand.
Exactly.
There must be some people that are hiding, though. Because I agree, I disagree with that. Yeah. And I sound like I'm being forcefully cynical.
Yeah.
But even if it's only a few percentage of people that are sort of just cowboys, let's say.
Yes, yes.
That are cavalier in their approach to things. Mm. And if caught in that moment, as someone was over their shoulder, as they say, tick that box. I know it's digital now. I'm still ticking an old school form here, aren't I? But if someone was over their shoulder saying, you sure on that? They instead of it being a lack of understanding, they'd go, nah, you know, but there's no reason for checking it.
Yeah.
That's where I end up in this situation where both of those factors are playing all the time, aren't they?
Yeah.
They're playing off against each other and they influence each other. So there's having not understanding is such an easy excuse, and one that I've used.
But it's also, Jack, I think it relates exactly to what we're saying. When we do training, eventually, and it doesn't take that many questions, it's usually three, everyone's in the chair.
Right.
Because then they're saying, whoa, okay, maybe.
Yeah, sure.
So I think as you say, we can't separate them out. Both of them exist, and they are probably the main two drivers.
Yeah, it's not as if you've got like 50% of people that are like staying on their feet because they've got some sort of swagger and they know that they're fraudsters. I know that's not by any stretch a large chunk of the population of therapists, and it'd be a strange thing for, I mean, healthcare doesn't self-select for that sort of individual anyway. You're in the wrong game. If you've got a penchant for fraud, you're not going to make much money in physio compared to in other things, are you? So, no, I totally get that. That's interesting. And would you agree with that? I didn't give you the chance, Sarah, in case you disagreed subtly of those two variables. Do you see the understanding as being the core one of those two as well?
I don't. I probably see it more of the external checking,
right.
And that's because having managed a care home and having to be answerable to CQC, it absolutely keeps you on your toes.
Right.
You have got to have everything in place because they could drop in at any moment.
Sure.
And also, it's my philosophy has always been you should always be ready for an inspection. You should never get ready for an inspection. You should be delivering service every single day that somebody could walk in, come and check it, and actually you'd pass. So this getting ready for the CQC to come in, as far as I'm concerned, is not useful or helpful.
So that reactive nature of knowing
you should be knowing that what you're delivering is, because at the end of the day, the resident or the patient in physio is at the heart of everything that you do.
Now, it'd be remiss for me to not say that in the care home, I was going to say community, what am I getting at? Section of the industry, let's say, of healthcare, there's going to be and is appropriately a social awareness of care quality that is going to be far heightened compared to, say,
absolutely,
the therapies professions, MSK departments,
definitely,
and private clinics. Now, we can definitely make a strong case for why you wouldn't want to flip that all of a sudden, because there's a difference in vulnerability to some extent between an athletic population within a private practice, say a sports private practice, and a residential care home. So I can understand that. But similarly, those, it sounds like you're saying that those factors that are playing, they don't just raise standards for the inspection. They raise standards because of the fact that there's a huge social and media consequence that could be there if you were to have stones that were unturned.
Yes.
Is that, sorry, I've spoken to what I'm hearing between the lines a little bit.
It's, I mean, running care home is much more, I mean, you're talking with vulnerable adults, you're talking about abuse, which is why the CQC was set up in the first place. Mm-hmm. However, I'm taking the principles of an external regulatory body that can come in at any moment and actually check that you're doing what you should be doing. I'm taking the principle of that. If you bring that into physio in whatever form it would take, people will up their standards and keep them higher. They might think, well, I might be lucky, I might get away with it, but the risk of them coming in and finding that they are inadequate is frightening.
Sure.
But I think the thing you've got to remember, Jack, is if this then come in, people have to understand what they're looking for. Yeah. So we then flip back to the understanding piece and the same piece of, we've got the standards, but do you understand what they say?
It'd be silly for me to try and uncouple those, and it's definitely me playing devil's advocate on it. I think that you both seem to be just one side of a fence on the same thing.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Respect for both sides of the fence. Yeah. I think it's the complacency can only exist within a system that allows for misunderstanding and doesn't regulate from the top down as well. It's like it's like this void in the middle where we can all exist because there's no pressure from below. There's no expectation of understanding, which would be, it's not like a staff room conversation where it'd be this is like a bottom up regulation where you've got such a social standard that exists that in a staff room, if you happen to utter that you didn't understand that policy or comply with it, it'd be so embarrassing for you that you'd sort that out regardless of regulation. And then you've got this top-down pressure that could exist as well. I mean, I don't want to skirt past the fact that we've not yet stated as to what the current level of expected and expected standards and the way in which those things are regulated. So I think that's smart for us to go there now. What are the existing governance structures for UK physiotherapists?
So the only thing that physios have to do to be able to practice, they have to be qualified, they have to be trained. Physiotherapist is a protected title, as we know. Then they have to be registered with the Healthcare and Professions Council. And if they're registered with the HCPC, then they can practice. So every 2 years, they have to sign to say that they keep up with all their CPD, all the standards, all the regulations. And the HCPC pulls 2.5% of all physios randomly every 2 years to fill in a CPD portfolio. I was chosen 2 years ago, so I've been through it. So I know exactly what they're looking for, and it has got nothing to do with governance. It is all to do with clinical practice and how it benefits your patients. Mm. And any work that you do, I was able to talk about the governance when I was pulled, and you have to show the evidence of how it's improving your patients' lives. So the CPD is all around clinical.
The restaurant.
All around the restaurant.
Yeah.
They don't ask about the kitchen. They do not say, can you show me evidence of how you gain informed consent or anything like that?
Yeah. Whilst we've grown as an organisation since, but there was a point where 3 out of 5 Choose Health staff had been called, and we were on the cusp of calling it a conspiracy. We were falling into this trap of being, and I've been caught up in it as well, and only maybe the one before yours, if it was 2 years. I bet mine was 4 years ago.
Yeah.
We'll definitely, I'll probably double back on this question, but a paper exercise to my mind, and certainly not something that did scrutinise the workings of the kitchen or the quality of the food.
The service.
No, I get that. Now, so let me just reiterate that then. So it is a someone with at least a bachelor's in physiotherapy that then practices as a physiotherapist by signing the Healthcare Professions Council's register, which involves them declaring themselves compliant with the processes and standards that you're describing, that, that obviously your tool and, and other things are trying to outline. But this is the box we're talking about. So when I was talking about this metaphorical box that's now a digital box that is a declaration of compliance, it is as simple as that, isn't it? It's not even that you... It's not even like those mandatory training things where you've got to at least entertain the... You've got to answer basic questions on it or anything like that. It really is just a, oh, I have to click through this before this date in order to retain and be allowed to go to work the following week after. I'm not being silly to say it's as simple as that.
You read a small declaration. Yeah.
It's as simple as that.
Yeah. Like it, a bit like this, the terms and conditions on any digital contract or when you sign up for a service or a new app, you've got to do that and you've just got to click the boxes in order for it to go away for you to be able to do the doing. It is very similar to that, isn't it? In a cultural zeitgeist in which we do a lot of that now compared to even 10 years ago, 20 years ago. So that's the existing governance structure for physiotherapists. What about for physiotherapy services or for physiotherapy departments or businesses and practices? Is it any different to that, really?
No, because it's the individuals that sign the forms. Where services may be different is you may be meeting other standards because you've got a contract and you've had tender specifications and things like that. So that would depend entirely on the contract that you've gone for. So there might be information that you have to provide that is based around some of the kitchen, for want of a better description.
Right.
Our measures, obviously, they're designed around the restaurant. But for the individuals themselves, the one piece they have to do is the HCPC declaration biannually.
And so none of the things you're describing there that might, like certain contracts might ask you to bring to bear certain parts of the governance framework for your organisation, but there's none of that that's universalised, is it? There's not each company that provides physiotherapy services need to meet these standards or would expect this regulation.
And members of the public, if they're encouraged to go and find a physio, they go on and they put find a physio in my area, and the only thing that they will check is that they're a member of the HCPC.
And they're on the register.
And that they're on the register. That's all it will tell them.
Yeah.
So this is where a lot of our listeners will be aware, but some might not, so we might as well visit it as well. We've not mentioned the CSP, the Chartered Society of Physiotherapy here, which sometimes gets lumped in and almost synonymous with the HCPC. Are you a CSP or HCPC? It's like, well, no, I'm both out of choice, but the only thing that I'm mandated to do is to practice as a physiotherapist.
Is HCPC. That's right.
So the CSP, a professional body and trade union representing physiotherapists. Now, it does. I think one of the reasons it's confusing is because they have a vast majority of UK physiotherapists, don't they? But that's not. They're not a regulator. There's no obligation, and you can practice as a physiotherapist, but not be
CSP member.
You have to have insurance. So if you're choosing not to join the CSP, you have to get your own insurance to be able to practice.
Sure.
So you have to be able. You have to have insurance, and you have to be HCPC registered.
And you have
you don't
to
have to. You don't have to show the HCPC your insurance, though. Do you?
No.
You declare yourself to have insurance.
Yes.
So it would only be another thing you're failing to.
Yes, but you have to. But what you have to do is the HCPC very clearly relates to your professional body standards. So you have to have that awareness of the quality assurance standards in physiotherapy.
Right,
and again, you're signing up to say you have an understanding of those.
Sure.
So whilst you don't have to be a member, you do have to know the content of the information that's in there and how you'd evidence it.
Sure. Okay. Any other? I'm just making sure we haven't missed anything with that with the CSP. Then there's nothing else that's relevant distinction that I need to make there.
No, you do. You don't have to be a member of the CSP to be able to practice. But as Sandra quite rightly said, the HCPC does heavily refer to the professional bodies and advises you to be part of them.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure. Now, how are any existing governance standards, which it sounds this question is stupid because you've just described such sparse structures, but how are each said sparse structures upheld? Is there like anything more than what we've already said that sort of makes sure that these standards are then enacted?
There is nothing. There is nothing because the HCPC is all around clinical CPD.
And signing that declaration.
So nobody ever checks that you, all your governance, all your kitchen is in order.
So let's as a thought experiment or a hypothetical, imagine that the revalidation process that you described before, 2.5% of people every 2 years, 2.5% of registered physios are then called to submit a portfolio of evidence.
Yes.
But as you've described, it's a clinical CPD style portfolio that we've both done. A joy, isn't it? What a great load of fun that is. But essentially, that imagine then that does, let's say it wasn't as we're describing it, and instead it did thoroughly examine the whole thing, the kitchen as well. That would still be a fairly low bar, wouldn't it?
It would be a self audit.
Yeah,
it's because they're not going to come out and check, so it would be a self audit again.
Yeah, and it'd only be marginally better, wouldn't it? That
because the concern is if it's an understanding issue, and you're self auditing, then you don't know what you don't know. So you're still going to tick the box to say you've got what you need. But there is a change coming. You know, there's been a request about what should regulation look like.
I know, yeah. We'll definitely come to that for sure. we've got changes afoot from our end as well for that. And it does seem to be building, which is really promising. But they're not. But then that was on an individual level. But I keep saying there's just a double check on an organisational level. So this is, I know the answer to this, but I want it to be on record. The CQC has no, they don't regulate physiotherapy.
The CQC does not regulate physiotherapy. The CQC is formed through the Health and Social Care Act, which was put together following the abuse in care homes. So the CQC was formed, and it is funded by the government. Okay, and the government basically tells them who to regulate and who to go in and see. And physiotherapists are excluded from that. At this present time.
Why? Just because of history and the legacy of how
that
organised?
I think probably because hospitals and care homes are high on the list.
Yeah.
And I think the CQC probably, well, we had a chat with the CQC at a conference we went to recently, and they did not realise that physios only have to sign. So they were quite shocked. However, they won't do anything about it unless the government actually changes the Health and Social Care Act.
Yeah.
And another interesting thing as well, Jack, is the public actually thinks physios are checked. If you have a conversation with them, Sarah and I, they're really surprised that there's no external check in place.
Which then begs the question about how informed consent ever is, doesn't it? Like that's the thing. Massive elephant in the room it's not for today's chat, but it's also something that does speak to a similar thing that listeners have heard me speak of before, and we're going to be doing more of this from the MSKR portfolio manifesto with regards to what the public perception of these things is super relevant for that informed consent question. And whilst I've not spoken about this in HCPC terms much on this show, we have talked about what does chartership mean to the public. And we've spoken about that before as to the perception of what that means to people is surely relevant, because we're carrying with it this sort of assumption that gets unsaid, and it's a concern, isn't it? So that's interesting though, isn't it? That the CQC thing is one of the misconceptions is that people go, well, that's nonsense, because I've had the CQC in my cubicle a few times. It's like, and I could say that myself, but I know full well, because of paid attention to it, and also know that is because they happen to be in that hospital at that time. But when they're checking that you washed your hands and that you know how to store your notes, they're not regulating physiotherapy. No. You just happen to be in the place in which they are.
Yeah. You happen to be on the ward that they're looking at.
And interestingly, they are, as Sarah and I've been told, they are popping into GP clinics more. We've heard about them going to a dentist. So they are popping in when they're there, but there's no formal way that they're doing things at the moment.
So you're in like a rumour mill WhatsApp group or something where it's like, we've heard they're in a dentist.
We get the messages. We've been seen. Yeah, they've popped in to see us. But quite the thing is, if they come in, then tell them how great the profession is. Because we're only ever going to be adequate if they don't know any different.
Sure. No, it's interesting. But then also, there's definitely something that I want to make sure that I'm saying it so that you make sure I double back on it in case it doesn't come up. But there's something to be said for how invested in the status quo we could be, because there's a lot of corners to hide as individuals, as, yes. as in, the industry at large, as a profession, for the title, etc. There are there's some motivation for us to just keep our heads down a little bit. And that's something I definitely want to come back to and hear your thoughts more thoroughly. But if I were to ask, just as we're talking about the current status quo and we're saying about the current system, how would you rate the current system if you were to audit it? So if you were asked to go in and have a look at it and say, what do you think of it?
The HCPC and their standards and regulations and the quality assurance standards of the CSP are excellent. They're really good. You know, they really, if you comply with all of those, you're running a really good service. So they are, they're excellent.
Wasn't my question though.
It's the it's the measurement. Okay. That needs it's the measurement that needs the review.
I know you were, two things. It's good because it's diplomacy of a sort, because you're right in that there's the words are there in the right places. Yeah. But it was more for me asking as to how do you rate the current system?
Okay.
You know, and it's like if I were to say, the equivalent would be if I ask, as I do podcast guests on a regular basis, how do you rate current practice? And they then said, well, the evidence base for this is blah, 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 blah. There's a gap between the evidence base and practice. Yeah. And my question was about practice. So the system as it exists that then enacts those standards, what do you think? How would you rate it?
Needs repair.
Repair. Another R word.
Yeah, it needs a little bit of work, I think, is the thing that we're saying. It's the way we measure it that really needs the review. Because the system currently... It doesn't really measure the kitchen. It really doesn't.
Sure.
And the system isn't doing that. And it's asking for... It's like, you know, we've got PROMs. PROMs are great, but they're outcome measures.
Sure.
They're not asking, is the service all those things that we've said about? And the thing is, you can have really good outcome scores, but that doesn't mean your equipment's safe and tested correctly. It doesn't mean you've got policy in place that protect you if something happens. And that's our concern. It seems to be front-end loaded.
Sure. So then I'm going to... it might get a bit twitchy, but I'm going to push you on some of this.
Yeah.
It needs repair. A little bit of tidying up around the edges, bit of body work, or does it need... repair in terms of the core of it? Like, how much are we talking? How much of the system? So that's why I said if you were to audit it, it's like, and if I need to, I'll force sort of numbers, percentages, whatever. I want to know a bit about how you rate the current system on any scale you wish.
Shall I go a bit with this? Yeah. So what we've done is we've set a benchmark. What we've done with the tool that we've designed is we've decided you have to start somewhere. So our repair started with, where's the benchmark? What is the minimal standard that we think everyone should achieve? And so that's where we've started from. And as obviously, I think people already gather it's all around the kitchen piece. But what we've done is we know where we'd like to take the benchmark, but you've got to set it somewhere that's a challenge, but that isn't so far, so high that it turns everyone off.
Sure.
So we know where we'd like it to end. We've got ideas where we'd like it to end, and it's going to keep evolving. But right now, we've set the bar where we think everyone should be able to reach the bar that we've created.
Mm, okay.
And the current system doesn't set that bar at all.
No. I mean, that's what's interesting, isn't it? It doesn't set our bar, really.
No.
But then to speak to the fact that that's really reassuring, and I didn't want to skip past that, was that the HCPC standards and the CSP standards that are then outlined, albeit just tickable, they are good. You really like those. That was really promising
the content's
for me when,
good.
When I heard about what you'd done, I was expecting you to say, this got us 40% of the way there, and then we needed to add our own standards. But it turned out that actually you were happy with the standards and you were feeling that held us to a good standard. It's just there's no mechanisms to do so. So then if I were to say, again, we're talking about the system as it exists, including our people's ability to be held accountable, the system's ability to hold individuals and departments accountable within that system. If I were to say, could you grade it on a percentage level, with 100% being absolutely perfect, sparkling, and 0 being the worst system you've ever seen of any flavour, where would you say the current system is on that?
Do you want to tell him where our scores are? Tend to be.
We've never found anybody that's 100%. Okay, we've found most people are around, if they get 70-75%, that's good. And we have been right down to probably 20% compliant. Sure. So it does range. So nobody's, as we, when we go in and people that we have audited do get worried and say, well, you know, I'm not very good. I said, actually, nobody's 100%.
Sure.
So if you can be between 75 and 80, fine. Yeah.
And that's super interesting, isn't it? Yeah. Especially because you've got a selection, you've got a sample bias that would naturally mean that there's a clear openness to engagement. That would mean that, you know, this isn't like a sample of the worst of the worst.
No.
This is going to be actually, if it, you could make a case for it being on the better end of it.
It is on the better end.
These are physios at the moment who are being very proactive and want to actually improve.
Yeah.
So they're seeking us out. Mm-hmm. So they are really wanting to take us on board and listen to what we say. So, you know, we haven't actually been able to reach those physios who will be probably at the lower end because there's too much fear.
So that gives us a decent snapshot, thank you for giving those numbers, that gives us a decent snapshot of individuals within a system then held to a account by a system that you've refined, that's benchmarked, which is lovely. I'm not wording my question brilliantly, but I'll try once more to say, if the system was to just get a rating, not on your benchmarked scale, I'm just meaning generally. So as a general rule, you were then tasked with giving a review score as a critic, an external critic, to the current system as it exists and the flaws that we've talked at. If you were to give that a score out of 100, independent of all the sort of benchmarking and tools and standards, what would you give it?
I would score it really, really low because actually nobody is really checking the stuff that we're talking about. They're just checking the CPD because the only formal check, apart from the contract specification pieces that you might pick up, is the HPC check. That is the only thing in the system that is currently mandated for all physios.
So how low? How bad's the system? You know, you said repair, and that's why I'm trying to see as to... And I know it's an awkward question.
How low are we going to go?
What percentage would you give the current system? How much of a fail? It sounds like it's getting a fail.
I would say it's getting a...
I would say it's getting a fail.
Out of 100%. 10?
I'd be a little bit more generous than that.
A little bit. 12?
Go a little bit more. I'd probably go 20.
Right. The current system is 20% and therefore just it's not fit for practice there, is it?
It's fit for the standards are fit for purpose,
yeah.
And the CPD fits for purpose. It's the bit between that gives us the concerns.
Sure, okay. No, that's interesting because you've thought long and hard on these things. You guys are as specialised in this area as I've ever known anyone. So that's a damning review at 20% of a system that's the only mechanism and only system that can hold physiotherapists accountable to serve the people that they serve.
For the front end. That's sure. What you got it. Sorry, for the back end. That's sure. What we're saying. The front end is measured, definitely measured.
Yeah.
And the HCP is checking your fit to practice through the portfolio piece.
Sure.
But what's not happening is those foundations.
Yeah.
That kitchen currently isn't checked, which is why we've designed what we've done and why we've set a benchmark, because we feel that piece is missing. If you've got that benchmark and you've got your outcome measures and you know your CPD is where it should be, then that overall, it's got to be that's got to be great. That puts everything together.
It
brings it all together. It feels as though there's a piece missing, and that's what Sarah and I have always felt, and why we did this.
Mm.
We felt there's a piece of the jigsaw that isn't there.
Yeah.
We've got the outcomes, we've got the CPD, but we haven't got the bit about the starting point, and we think we've done the starting point.
Lovely. No, I get that, and that's great. And I think I just wonder with that. I bet if we've got time, we'll disagree about whether the CPD bit's fit for purpose as well. But in terms of the, you know, you're right to be focusing on the governance being like the kitchen and all that sort of stuff. I totally get it. And that seems a totally reasonable. I wouldn't disagree with that 20% sort of rate. And it's trying, it's attempting, it doesn't get a 0 or a 5, but essentially it just isn't necessarily holding anyone or itself to account and doesn't seem to be in. There's no mechanism for self-improvement on it either, is there?
I think the thing as well, Jack, that concerns Sarah and I is that our average score is probably 50% or even lower. Mm-hmm. So we've not seen very many people at the higher end. And that is a concern when it's the ones that want to produce the evidence for their contracts or for things like that that are coming to us. And yet we're still not getting a great score. And our real worry is about people out there who haven't understood it. So potentially how low could they score through purely a lack of this lack of understanding that we keep talking about? And that is a real worry for us.
Well, yeah, I think you're right. I think I'd argue you're getting 15, 20% on average on your mean scores. You're getting a shunt because of your sample bias.
Yeah.
So therefore we're looking at well-meaning clinicians that are then just clearly still not cutting the mustard, which is a concern. So let's talk about how to put that right then. What bottom-up and top-down changes would you recommend?
So basically what we're seeing from the bottom, we feel that the thing that's important there is this whole cultural piece about people really need to kind of understand why they would want to do governance, why would they want to talk about governance, why would they want to be able to show that their service is good. So that's that piece for us. And so why would you not want to evidence that you're safe, effective and all those things that we've talked about? Why wouldn't you? You'd want to. Mm-hmm. You've got a great practice. You'd want to be able to say to your patients, I know I'm this, 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 this and this, and I can prove it.
Yeah.
If you wouldn't, that's really concerning. Mm-hmm. And then from the top, the other thing that bothers Sarah and I is leaders and managers have to understand it. So they want their team to understand it. So you've got to get buy-in and understanding, not just of the whole workforce. If the person who manages you doesn't understand it, how are you going to understand it? So there's that whole piece. And so we need to make sure that happens. And then it's like, you know, Sarah and I were saying, if the CQC come in, why would you want to close the door and hide behind it? Why don't you want to open the door and tell them this is a great profession, like nursing and doctors do? Why do you want to show them what we do and raise awareness of the profession and perhaps get some of the changes? And interestingly, what we're beginning to see and feel is this cultural change. And you've probably seen it in Frontline. People are now saying, I'd like to be registered. What can I do? How can I evidence? And that's exactly what we're wanting. But the concern still is that's that top percentage that are interested. It's that those others that are almost trying to stay under the radar and stay in the corner and keep the door closed is the bit that really worries us. But I think from the top down, because that's kind of bottom up, from the top down, what we've got to have is we've got to have something that makes us more accountable. And something that says it's not good just to have a good restaurant, it's not good just to have a good kitchen. You've got to have the whole piece.
Yeah, it's amusing, isn't it, because we all fall into the trap of saying we want something to hold us more accountable. It's not even a more, it's just accountable.
Accountable, exactly. Yeah. It's just to get the benchmark.
It's just crazy, isn't it? But I totally understand, like, linguistically, I make that mistake of a sorts all the time, where it's like, we could do with more accountability. It's like, we could just do with some.
Yes,
we'll see. Yeah. You know, it's like, I'm it's so interesting because I'm so not the guy that's sort of, that my instinct does not play into appealing to regulation. It's not, you know, I as a character, you know, generally speaking, I'm the sort of famed dissident in this space. So sometimes people are surprised where I'm then saying, no, we need to be better regulated. But it's because there's such a lack of, it's a wild west of a sort. And the only reason it gets away with being a wild west is it's a wild west of thoughtful healthcare professionals that generally speaking would be in the right, you know, you've got a self-selection that helps us get away with it. Whereas if it wasn't, if you didn't have that goodwill, if you didn't have that fact that people have gone into it for usually the right reasons, means that it probably would have bigger consequences than we're facing at the moment. So that's super interesting. And yeah, some accountability, please. Certainly makes sense.
We come along as a carrot, not a stick.
Right, yeah.
Well, so that's how that's exactly how we come along. The idea is to help and make people more aware so that they understand and they start to understand what they don't know and how they can make those changes.
But again, another flag for you to bring me back to in case I forget to is the flight of the carrot stick thing, because I know you do and I agree. But definitely. We want to talk now about barriers, okay, and what are the barriers to progress and the things you've just described, and how might we then overcome them?
I think we come back to what we said earlier when Sarah and I said, the biggest barriers are the understanding and the lack of external checking. and, you know, as you quite rightly said, was on the fence. They're the two things that's really important for both of us. And it's getting that culture that actually we should be wanting to do this. You know, it's not we have to do it, because, yeah, we do have to do it, and we signed to say we're doing it. But you need to want to do it. So you've got to understand it. You've absolutely got to understand it. But actually, you need someone to check.
Sure.
It needs that driver there, because at the moment, you can shy away from it, and people do.
So let's break them down then. So there's a core thing there. A barrier is a lack of understanding.
Yep.
Therefore, a promotional piece of work or things like this and all yep. sorts of stuff that you guys bang in the drum.
Also, in Frontline, when you look at all the courses, they're all clinical. So it would be superb to see some courses and training courses on consent and chaperoning, on the standards, on the regulations. Do you meet them? But it's all clinical. So there's nothing out there at the moment to help physios understand, apart from us.
So let's imagine that we're only... Let's imagine that there's no ability for us to try and influence or enact any top-down change. Mm. And that we're only going to try and do this as a informative, sort of soft power style, social change type movement. And I agree with you that would be great. But it seems, and I know you two enough to know that you're probably not naive enough to think that would happen without any sort of top-down force. Because people would have to go to pocket and think, right, I have 200 quid here. Do I go to the Big Arse Conference, which of course you should, or do I instead go to an informed consent and chaperoning court? It just seems so niche, and it also seems like, well, if I don't, what's the consequence? And, and we know they're impossible.
Yes. So that's exactly. the funny bit,
isn't it?
Yeah.
And so that's why we need this other barrier, which is the fact that there's a lack of checking to be put right, isn't it?
And it's really interesting in that we're doing training days, and it's just really interesting for Sarah and I to see the change and the comments from the beginning to the end of the day. So you classically, we're here, it's a bit turgid, it's a bit boring, but we have to be here. And at the end of the day, do you know what? This makes a lot of sense and we should be doing this. And actually, it isn't boring when it's turned around and people understand it.
Yeah.
And it's something that you'd want to do.
Yeah.
But that message hasn't got out there yet. And so it's quite a difficult message, because there's two of us here with a few more people starting, yourselves included, gaining momentum now about gathering that evidence, creating that benchmark. And it is going to have to come from the bottom up.
Sure.
Because at the moment, as we've all discussed, there is not a top-down driver currently.
So it feels like...
Excuse me.
A worry then is... It's an imperfect analogy, but we would need to be some of the turkeys voting for our version of Christmas.
Yes.
Like, because... It's not that, because that sort of infers that would be then a problem regulation, or that we would then it would be to appeal for something that was going to be disruptive in a negative way. But actually, what we're saying is we do then, from the bottom up, need to then appeal to the top down to say we need you to hold us to better standards so that we can raise our standards. Otherwise, it's not going to be universal. If anything, you're going to increase the inequalities that exist between quality.
Yeah.
Because you've got people that are then compliant. So you've raised awareness, you've improved an understanding, you've got people that are willing to hold each other and themselves to account. But those that make the comment that I made flippantly earlier, which is, but why should I? Why, you know, what if I don't? What are the consequences? A lack of stick for your terms is gonna be a massive problem. In fact, as I said, the gap would only widen without that, wouldn't it?
How would you feel, Jack? If I can just ask you this question, how would you feel running your practice here if there was a physio practice not too far away who'd been externally independently audited and could advertise that, and could advertise the fact that they were compliant with all standards and regulations, as HCPC and CSP? What would you think?
I feel intimidated.
Yeah, and could they charge more because they've got that?
Well, fortunately at the moment, in some ways fortunately, not, because I think
but
at the moment, because, because it's a bit of a, because the public are so in the dark about the real politic of the situation means that we can get away with that. But in the future, the process would be that, of course they could and they should be able to. They're totally justified reason for charging.
And how about if they could get paid more by the insurers?
And how about if you could, and sure. how about when you're applying for a contract, you can comply in more detail with the specification because you've got evidence that is more detailed than your competitive colleagues.
And externally validated.
And externally validated.
Rather than just self-submission
yes.
and stuff.
Yeah.
And we exist within a high trust society, but that is really straining it to a high level where it's like there's layers upon trust and goodwill that then is just it's just this assumption of it being fine, and it's not good, is it? So no, all those things are great questions and definitely ones that we need to be thinking of, and it will take for that social pressure. It will take for that thought that you've just said, that hypothetical as to. What if there was someone up the road that was not just like in the general market of things competing to look better, but to actually be better in an obvious and evidence way in their structures, not necessarily in their practice, not the flair or charm of their clinicians, but the actual structures,
the
that
fundamentals,
underlie the foundations. Yeah. Yeah.
And I think the other thing, Jack, that we were saying is that the recent paper that's come out that looked at what could regulation look like was really interesting in that a lot of the HCPC professions felt that there should be a review of what regulation looks like. Now, we don't know what it's going to look like. The Professional Standards Authority obviously involved in this, so we don't know where it's going, but you can feel that change is there for people who are saying, we think we can do this. We think we've got evidence. And actually, we want to be recognised for having that evidence compared to some of our colleagues who may not.
Mm.
So it's a real interesting time and a real opportunity.
Yeah. I mean, it's for me, it's such a fun time as well to have the HCPC bringing out policy documents like reforming governance standards, reforming regulation.
Yes.
It's
this is
words
exactly,
that have been parroting for so long. Yeah. Our words as well, which of course are magic to me. But it's definitely an exciting time. I wonder then, if we think about the barriers to progress, if we still linger on that a little bit, do you see ways in which we can, outside of the ones we've just described then, so we appeal for better regulation and accountability, we then create a social movement including promotion of understanding so that then people can comprehend where their shortcomings are. It's a humbling process.
Yeah.
You know, for me, it hasn't been that I happened upon one of your training sessions. For me, it was taking a meeting with you, but it felt like I went to school that day. You know, it changed me. I was on the train afterwards just like thinking, yeah, this is shaken me to recognise how, despite best efforts, I've ended up not being able to. I can't hold myself even to the standards that I thought I had because my understanding was so shallow. And that's someone that otherwise has thought in that direction. So therefore, again, through no fault of theirs, clinicians getting stuck into what they think is their career and their profession. And it's often some differently, but most it might be that it's their only career that they've had. It's not as if they've got. They're not even thinking, this is strange. When I used to be a surveyor, I was held to different standards. Or when I used to be a doctor, you know, that's not a thing. So they don't necessarily have anything to compare to. That change is something that you're going to have to, it'd have to be a hell of a long game though, wouldn't it? Do you not think? Like, that's one of the things I worry about, is that we've not got a long runway for this to change people's perception and understanding, etc. That would take many, many years. And if, because of the, it only got a 20% on your rating score, the system as it exists isn't fit for purpose in that direction. We know that the timeline of doing any sort of promotional and awareness campaign for something that's famously not sexy for the reasons we talked about before, does the shit hit the fan before we manage to get on top of this? How do we get ahead of it?
I think the thing that we need to bear in mind is if there's enough people, and you say the three, you know, your big R's have started it. If there's enough people want to make a change, then we've got to do, as we've said, we've got to start coming from the bottom up and saying, well, can we create a benchmark that we think we should all be achieving? What does that benchmark look like? And yes, does it look like a change? The papers say there's going to look like a change. And one thing that was reassuring in the paper was it was acknowledging the fact that making changes takes a long time when it has to go back through parliamentary steps. What they're now saying is, can we look at perhaps greater autonomy so that smaller changes can start to happen while you're waiting for the big changes? We see this as the beginning of a big change, but it's that first small step, because you've got to start somewhere. And so we've started by saying we've got to have a standard. We've got to have a standard for the foundations. We've got standards there, but we've got to have a standard that measures the standards, for want of a better description. And we currently haven't got it.
Yeah. And we, so as a private business in this space, you naturally are going to be more carrot than stick, because people can just not engage.
Yeah.
But it does... You're only able to dine out on said carrot and offer said carrot if there is, you're kind of recognising the need for a stick elsewhere. It's not a stick for you guys to wield. That would be ridiculous. And also, you've not got the mechanisms to do that, because people could just withdraw.
Exactly.
But there is a need for carrot and stick. Because sometimes we do just get a bit carried away. Of course, we'd all prefer for carrots to do it. But unfortunately, to some extent, for the standards to raise and the universalizing of the process we're describing, we do need to find a way to at least show ourselves to be willing to be regulated or made more accountable to some extent, don't we?
And I think I think the beginning of that has happened, hasn't it, with the people saying with the regulation they want to see some change.
Yeah.
So you feel as though that is coming.
I think it will be peer pressure.
Sure, it
well.
Will be.
I think physios will not stand any longer or having somebody working down the road that they know is not fulfilling what they should be fulfilling. And I think a lot of it will come from innovative physios who are forward-thinking, who are thinking it's time for change.
Well, I certainly hope so. It's certainly exactly the mechanism, the levers that I'm trying to pull as hard as I can with what
Big
we
ass,
have.
Yeah.
So one of the things I'm willing to leak on air here is a couple of... I've got all the policies here from the Manifesto for Reform, and there's a couple of them that I know that you guys have contributed to, and I know the governance chapter of the Manifesto speaks to. And so I just wondered if I could get your take on these as being whether you feel that if they were enacted, would they move us in the better direction? I'm not saying are they perfect, but would they put us in a better place? So the MSKR recommend that physiotherapists be included in the CQC list of registrants required to be registered under the regulated activity of treatment of disease, disorders or injury.
Absolutely.
Yes. Resounding yes, 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 yes. Tomorrow, please, would be lovely.
Fantastic. MSK advocates for the development of an accreditation process in which MSK services can aspire to a quality standard mark.
We would say we go wider than MSKR. We actually feel that it should be more than just MSK. It needs to be the service, but there needs to be a standard. And as we're saying, we're trying to create a benchmark to start from.
Sure. Now, when it comes to creating accountable clinicians, something that we've talked about today, but also a subpart of the chapter is under that headline. MSKR propose a phasing out of the current continuing fitness to practice process for practitioners covered by the HCPC.
Do you want to talk, sir, as you've been through the process most recently?
Because I know you know that's where there may be a dispute between us in a sense as to whether or not you feel that part of it you've not got as much of a problem with as the lack of governance regulation.
Having taken someone to the HCPC when I was a manager, and it was like there was absolutely no teeth in there at all, and the person could continue. And it just made me lose faith.
Yeah. And did the HCPC find out anything of interest about you through the exercise that they made you do 2 years ago?
No. If they did, they haven't followed up on it when it could have been something that they could have actually thought, wow, look at this, what this physio is doing here.
How can we utilise it?
Yeah, and is it unlikely that they're going to pick up on the good? But then also, do you think that process that you went through, was there any mechanism for it to have caught anyone that wasn't going to meet those standards? Was there any way in which that self-declaration process, having to present your own evidence, etc., do you feel that would have caught anyone in a net?
People do fail, so they obviously do look at it.
Sure.
And they do, whether they've actually told anybody that they can no longer practice, I don't know.
Incredibly rare. I mean, I have looked into it. It's incredible. Because, like I say, I failed it on a misstep on the way in which it had been submitted, which was amusing, because I got a lot of people telling me, you know, I got a lot of emails around that time, and do every 2 years we get emails saying, I passed my fitness to practice thing purely using Physio Matters and your resources, so thank you for doing what you're doing. And I amusingly reply and say, well, I failed it trying to use the same things, but that was because of, on a technicality. When you then repeat it and resubmit it, apparently it's incredibly rare, and I think I did look it up. It's in the maybe less than 20, more than 10 people that end up, and often it's because they're asked to resubmit and then they go, sod it, I'll retire, or I wasn't that bothered anyway, I'm not currently practicing anyway, I was just doing it because I thought it was going to be easy, and they just decide to opt out. So yeah, it's very, very few people that it catches.
So therefore physios, there is some fear around to submitting for your CPD. There is fear around that.
Yeah.
And I know some physios who, when that came in as a requirement, they retired and left, or left physio because they didn't want to even run the risk of being called.
Because we're so not used to it then.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
Yeah. Isn't we've got, absolutely.
It's made into such a big thing because we're so not used to it.
Yeah.
Whereas if we were sort of regularly proud to proud to declare as to what we've been doing in that space and how we comply to best serve the people that we're trying to help, then it wouldn't be be a big deal, would it?
It's exactly as we were saying. You don't get ready for an inspection.
No.
You're always there. So it becomes part of your culture. And people we've worked with, that's one of the interesting things they say. Suddenly we talk about it every day. It becomes a part of what we do. And that's how it should be. Then things like this don't feel as though there's such big mountains to climb.
Sure. So the proposing of the phasing out of that continuing fitness to practice process as it exists now, doesn't sound like you're averse to. Obviously, it's a big question mark that then comes as to what to replace it with.
And that's what will be interesting on when the, you know, this the process that's going on at the moment, the consultation that's completed, and the next steps. We're really interested to see who's involved in the next steps, what's it going to look like, what are the proposals put forward, how will they consult with people about those proposals.
Yeah, as are we. And one of the things that's interesting is that it could well be that they're already making progress in a better idea than we currently have, but the reforming governance chapter of the manifesto speaks to this in some of its policies in suggesting, therefore, because it wants to make that point, we don't want to be guilty of then saying tear it down, but we don't know what to put in its place.
Exactly.
Someone might do. So we're going to take our best guess on that. And MSKR suggests a mandatory annual appraisal as a requirement for all HCPC registered practitioners, which will include agreed supporting evidence set by the HCPC and aligned to HCPC standards. So that's the first bit. So I know that's not saying how we'd submit that, but do you think that would move us in the right direction?
It sounds like it would move us in the right direction as long as we've got steps that mean you're looking at the whole journey, not the missing piece that we've talked about, this bit that's missing. So is there stuff that's coming from kitchen? Is there stuff that's about the restaurant? And have you got stuff about CPD?
So if then that appropriate appraisal process that was thorough was created and then mandated, and you then were to submit that online through through a digital process and form through the HCPC, the revalidation would then be the HCPC auditing 2.5% of registrants submitting their appraisals against the compliance standard. Would that be better or worse than the current system?
It would depend, on, I would say, on the training that's put in place. Because, again, unless there's training, you're going to have a population still not knowing what they don't know. Yeah. And so they're still marking their own homework, for want of a better description. So you could still have this big area for concern, as we've said all along. Because people don't know what they don't know, they genuinely think they know it. Mm. So it's making sure we don't replace it with a system where there's still too much internal tolerance, shall we say, for a better description.
It's still a movement in the right direction in that you're not marking your own homework. You've got a colleague marking your homework, which I know still has its biases, but it's still that's the one step, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
I do know what you mean. To me, though, if you were to instigate a change that we're describing, it'd be very strange if a training package, promotional content, that's when that seems to be more palatable. Yeah. When there's just an existent status quo, to inject only that when there's nothing new about it, that's sometimes a big
difficult
challenge. Whereas when you've got actually a change of procedure or policy, even if it was something like because we feel it's such a paper exercise. It's sort of like if you were to replace it with mandated appraisals. Now, there's a lot of people then sometimes throw their arms up and say, well, I've had mandated appraisals for 20 years or whatever. Mm. It's like, yeah, in your organisation, it's just it's not universalised. And so that's where this, for me, might just start to move that needle in the right direction and be a sensible way in which we can appeal to better regulation without necessarily making the regulator then have more work on the hands. It's actually streamlined.
Exactly. And again, it would be bottom up, but it would come down to what does the content look like and does it cover the whole of the patient experience and journey? Because that's what we're all here for.
The devil's in the details, absolutely. Yeah. So the manifesto is simply to agitate for policies that would then move us in the right direction. The detail as to what they then look like and what replaces these things, of course, is certainly for any working group, for the HCPC to hopefully be informed by the right people, the right personnel. Doesn't sound like you two have been called upon yet by them to assist with that process, but we know that it's relatively young, and I hope it's not that they're overlooking these corners of the conversation, and obviously this, and we'll do everything we can to get this under their nose, as well as of course the manifesto out soon. Will be waved right in front of them as loudly as we can. But generally, the process of creating robust systems and creating accountable clinicians are the two headings of what we're trying to do within the governance chapter of the manifesto. And so we're looking forward to getting that out there, but also for these things to be scrutinised, not in dissimilar ways to what we've just done there at the conference, so that we can try and refine these things, because it's important that they're not just we'd be hypocrites to take it lightly and think that it was something that was a really simple thing to change, when actually it's something we need to tidy up.
If it was simple, we'd have done it.
No, exactly, for sure. Now, when it comes to the common mistakes that MSK clinicians would make, what do you feel when they go through your audit process? Where do you feel are the what's the low hanging fruit?
Yeah, very easy. Do you always write your notes in such a way that they tell a story, so that if you're not here tomorrow, your colleague could actually know what you were thinking, and if that patient was worse or the same, they wouldn't have to go through a full reassessment. Treat next week. Review and treat as necessary is no longer acceptable. But for Sarah and I, it's still very much commonplace.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, see, I wish I hadn't asked that question now. That's just going to depress me. It's been such an uplifting interview. And then, so that's still a common thing, is it?
That's still found a lot. And people often, they'll have a great plan at the beginning with time goals, but they'll never have revisited them. So you'll have a discharged patient where there hasn't been a full review, and there'll be cases where someone's come in because something's happened, someone else has come in, and they've had to reassess far more than you really feel they should have needed to, because there just wasn't enough description there. And then the other things that we see regularly are, do people really understand about duty of candor, informed consent and chaperoning? Right. And so often those fall down as well.
Right, okay, and that's when held to account on being asked about them.
Yeah, when we ask people, as we said, the questions we start with, when we ask these kind of questions, people sit down.
Because they think family members are a chaperone.
No. The notes thing then, I mean, not that I do it any regularity, but there's been times where I've been tweeted almost like spoof terrible notes, where it's just like subjective as previous, objective as previous, treatment as last week. Plan, see next week.
And plan, see next week, or review next week, or review in 2 weeks is still more common than any of us would really like it to be.
And without the detail that comes prior to it that would explain as to what is the plan ongoing.
Yes.
We quite often don't see any goals as well, don't we?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And we look, you know, and obviously I come from outpatients, so when I'm out there and someone's saying, okay, we give consent for you to look at notes, I will look at them and I'll think, I would have to be reassessing this patient to know where you were going, because I can't get a grasp on where your next steps were going to be.
You must be interested now as to whether or not, even if these things were made more accurate, even if the documentation is more accurate, it must be a concern for you to have to, when you're reading these things, there's such a disparity in practice between clinicians anyway, that people, like sometimes I've picked up notes where I've no issue with the notes. It's that I just I couldn't comply with their plan because I disagree in principle with everything that they're doing because there's such disparity within the profession. Yeah.
But that's fine. You know, you can agree to disagree. You can agree to review that way. But when you can't even see where the person's going because there's no direction there, and that's the thing that concerns us most is when there's no direction.
Sure.
And unfortunately, it's still far more common than we would like.
Yeah.
And peer reviews, the understanding around peer reviews isn't there either.
Right.
Yeah. And the importance of notes audits as well, and closing the loop and action plans. It's like, yes, we do a notes audit, and then they fail on something, but then they don't redo it until the following year, because it only has to be done once a year. So they don't realise that once you've done your audit, you then find out what you need to improve on. You then set yourself a time and an action plan, and then you re-audit after 2 or 3 months. So there's no real closing of the loop.
Yeah.
And then the other thing that we find, and hence that we've defined our tool, is we've rag rated it red, amber and green so that people have got priorities, because sometimes people then just don't know where to start because they're not sure when there's quite a few things. If you imagine, if we're talking averaging 50%, there's often quite a lot to work on.
Sure, of course. Yeah. So if I've heard from you and from the CSP that they're big fans of yours, and I can understand why, as am I. But then also, it to some extent begs the question, when I think about why they might be fans of yours, is to, in part, you're a private sector company that's doing their job for them to some extent, or doing things that I've appealed to them and others have appealed to them for many years to do. Now, we've talked about the fact that they can't be a universal mandatory regulator. However, if they're asking us to sign to standards, I've never been checked against those, and they'll certainly take my money on a monthly basis. So whilst it's nice for them to have them as a fan, and an important fan at that, do you think I've got a point in that space?
I think the thing that's difficult is they're not a regulator, so they can't regulate. And so they do recognise that there's something that needs to be put in place. And it comes back to what Sarah and I were saying. Their standards are actually very good. You know, the content in there is good as long as A, people understand it, and B, they want to adhere to it. And that's the big question. We're coming back to the same thing all the time. How do we make people adhere to things when there's nobody really checking except you're signing a box biannually?
But there's nothing to stop them holding their members to account.
I don't know whether their constitution would allow that. So I think we'd have to look at, you know, how is their constitution set up?
If you breach their code of conduct and standards, etc., they can disbar you as a member. And so, if one of their standards was for you to comply with their, you know,
the HCPC does a regulation. So I suppose
I'm not asking for them to regulate. I'm asking them for they've got a bar, and your tool speaks to that bar as well, doesn't it? For CSP. Yeah. So I mean the CSP standards. So if you would separate to the HCP standards, if then I as a member on whatever basis was held through whatever system to account to the CSP's standards, then that's something. Why not do that?
Because they're not an endorsing body. So they wouldn't endorse us because they don't endorse. What we would say is, you know, how do you endorse it? What are we going to do? How can somebody do that?
I suppose I'm not being clear on that. I'm not saying why don't they have you do this. I'm meaning that if the CSP was to hold their members accountable to the standards that the members are declaring by being a member, to use the term chartered, etc., that's a process that doesn't exist at all, does it?
No, there's no process.
So the HCPC, although it's 20% as we've rated it, it's still our process. The CSP, barring you being them finding out that you've breached their processes to the point in which that they decide to declare you you're no longer allowed to be a member.
Not fit to practice. Yeah.
So I'm just fit to practice. I tried not to use just because I'm trying to prise it away from the HCPC thing. Yeah. So imagine it's someone that's breached the CSP's code of conduct, but they've not necessarily then, the HCPC have reviewed it and they're still allowed to practice as a physio, but the chartered society doesn't want you as a chartered member and revokes your membership. I'm just trying to think, apart from those rare incidents, as to why I can't appeal to the CSP to be made more accountable to my membership. separate to the HCP.
Jack, can I ask you, do you have any figures on if they do actually revoke your membership of CSP?
Do I have any figures as to when that happens?
As to
Again, super rare. Yeah, I have looked into that. Yeah, it's super rare. Yeah. But also, it's only in instances of major. It's like a professional disrepute thing. So if something's happened, and also, I say super rare. It's super rare for them to do that if the HCPC is happy enough.
Because the HCPC is the body that does the check.
So when someone is declared not fit for practice within the HCPC, it follows because you have to be HCPC registered to be, apart from when you retire, etc.
However, the CSP do look at the incidents because of the insurance side of things.
Yeah.
So a lot of the incidents that will come through to the CSP for them to pay out, basically, there is limitations put on that physio's practice following that, but there's no governance around it. They're not actually checked. So my question is around, so they've done something wrong, they've had a payout, they've put on practices, they have to be supervised. Where's the evidence that they are being supervised? Where is the evidence that they are competent again to practice? They've not been revoked from the HCPC, they're still able to practice, but under supervision. Mm. So the CSP have dictated that, have said that's what's got to happen. And my question is, where is the evidence that it does happen?
Yeah. What does that process look like?
Who actually signs off on that?
Who closes that loop?
Right. And when I know it does get messy because we're talking about the HCPC, CSP thing again, which I said I know is a misconception, but not a misconception we have between the three of us. But I'm just thinking that as a chartered society, when they have their standards that are distinct from the HCPC, although they're linked, but there's an appropriate distinction that's relevant. Yeah. Those standards are ones that are being adhered to only by the same mechanisms and tick boxes that we described before.
Yes, we agreed on that. Yes.
And do you see there being any reason as to all the things we've described? When I've asked you to how would you improve the system, and you've described understanding and accountability, and you've described then a process of creating the accountability through appropriate regulation and being held to those standards. Can you think of a reason as to why the CSP can't do that for their members as a chartered society? So to be chartered, you would need to do this, and we're going to hold you to it by these mechanisms.
That would be a change in the way that they operate. But there's nothing to say you couldn't make that change.
Sure.
So no, we're not saying you shouldn't make that change. It would be excellent change.
Yeah, yeah.
And it would have to be linked to having the support of the HCPC, because at the end of the day, they would be the people who would be regulating that change.
Yeah. The process of what it requires to be a member of a chartered, chartered, and to be a chartered member, etc., I suppose is the bit I'm sort of quibbling. And I'm just thinking that if we were to think, because it's not a groundbreaking suggestion I've just made there. It's actually what most...
It
not
could
necessarily
be a
all member organisations, because then that's that.
It could be a question for council, couldn't it?
Yeah.
What does it mean? What should it look like?
Yeah. What
does it currently look like? What do we think it needs to look like?
Yeah.
And isn't there a conflict of interest there?
A conflict of interest if they were to do it with the HCPC?
No. The conflict of interest that they are actually the Charter Society, so they want you to be a member of their body.
Yeah.
So the conflict of interest is to... They want you as members, okay, and then they're going to regulate you and hold you accountable for those.
Sarah's just teed up my question. I was just going there. Of course it is, yeah. No, sorry, I thought you meant with the HCPC.
No.
Yeah, but this one, my next question was going to be, because I was just checking that we weren't disagreeing on this. It doesn't sound like we are.
No.
But the CSP, as an organisation... It's that really is a turkey's voting for Christmas thing because of what you've just described.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so essentially, if at the moment I'm describing it as, we described it as no bar, didn't we? We didn't even say it's a low bar, right? So I'm then mapping that onto the CSP and saying, especially because there's people that could then say, if they said, here's the bar, we know that they're not a regulator, and therefore people go, well, I won't be a CSP member then, right? But as an organisation, it's very difficult for them to say, fine, we don't want you anyway, we're raising standards, because of the way in which it's structured. This is kind of what I was going to come to, is that surely is it's a relevance. It's not like they're thinking this. There's not someone, no evil genius stroking a cat thinking, no, this is a great plan we've got here to make loads of money for this organisation. But as a general rule, if they set a bar and people either don't reach it or decide not to even try to reach it, then that is fewer members. Yeah. And that is, like you say, a conflict of interest that's relevant, isn't it? So how do you see your work being able to appeal? It needs to be so strong, and the message needs to be so clear, and the people need to get so comfortably behind it. The pressure needs to be great because there's things like that playing at the other side of it. Yeah. The status quo is being maintained by factors such as that, which are just, that's coincidental sort of legacy stuff. Mm. The Chartered Society also being its trade union, and also having a larger percentage of professionals within it than most other member organisations in other professions. They're all really relevant, aren't they, to the social pressure that's required to then change it becomes higher. So I just wondered, like, how do we get all the things we're saying that we agree on, how do we get the message so crisp that it's then going to change what is seemingly a very challenging thing to change?
But I think we are all on exactly the same page. It's how do we get that bottom up movement,
right,
so that we do drive that change? And I think it's can we come back to this whole piece about the understanding and people understanding and wanting to prove what they do, rather than just having to prove what they do? Because at the moment you don't have to prove it.
Yeah.
You just do your 2-year portfolio, and because you don't understand it, you're in the blind, really. And yeah, so, you know, we're almost coming back to where we started from, aren't we, really? Which is, it's we need to do both things, and it would have to come from the bottom up.
Totally with you. What do you think the critical mass is then? My last question, by the way, before we wrap up, and you can give your final thoughts and how to people can find you. My last question is, what do you think the critical mass would be in terms of numbers or percentages or what have you? How many people need to be enlightened on this for us to really make a difference?
I don't know, being perfectly honest, because it doesn't need to just come from the individuals themselves. You could have drivers from large external bodies who are starting to say, you know, like insurers, like people who have got contracts, you know, your AQPs, things like that. People say, we want to see some of this evidence. So it could be organisations as well as individuals. And also it could be the public. So if we can get the message out there, and the public at the moment, as Sarah and I were saying, they think these checks are in place. And so if people realise the checks aren't in place, you can hopefully start the snowball rolling, for want of a better description. But how big do you need to get it?
Do you not think we've been playing with fire with that then? I said it with my last question, didn't I? I lied, because you've just made a really good point we didn't come back to with the public thing.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, I agree with that. I've also admitted at the start of the show that's one of the things that drove my interest, is because I'm just like, oh, we're playing with fire, what the hell? Like, what are the consequences? And I think I'd said to you, and I've not said it on air, but only because I forgot to, about the fact that it's like, in my nightmares, there's a panorama with my profession
with physio
being
on it instead
mud,
of, yeah.
An MSK physio being through the mud because of this misconception that the public have had, and some of that misconception being by design. You know, it sort of suits us. It's this elephant in the room we don't want to talk about. So I'm just thinking that, although I agree, if the public knew, that would be a bit of pressure. If the professionals knew, because they became a better understanding of this, then that would be better. The insurers started to ask for it, or contractors and commissioners started to ask for those things to be accounted for, presenting hoops. Yeah. It'd only work all together, because if they did it without the understanding piece that you mentioned before, they'd just say, oh, they're making us jump through these stupid hoops. And it's like, no, they're really important things. So, and then the regulator did more. Yeah. So I get this. But if we, let's say that the lever that we're struggling to pull, the understanding lever, because the promotional materials, we know that would cost a lot of money, and also take more than this show to get that out there. Regulator decides to sort of drag its feet because of, you know, we can understand at the top of politics at the moment, they've got various other priorities. Let's say that sort of grinds to a halt, or is going to be sluggish. If then, for good reason, like you've just described, we then pull the lever to try and influence the public and start to help them realise that this is unregulated, far less regulated than you probably thought, that's where those sort of panoramas, you know, my nightmare comes true, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it's like, to my mind, is there a period of time where we could get a house in order before that almost leaked? Or do you think that's just a necessary thing we need to cross as fingers that we can...
We'd hope people start to get the house in order now. And we're starting to see that in front line of things that we've said. And we're starting to see it with some of the specifications in some of the tenders, because we feel exactly the same. We want the house in order before, and you hope it never happens. You don't ever end up with a panorama style event that involves physio. You know, we were saying that from physio right now probably has the greatest opportunity it's ever had to show what a profession it is. With first contact physio, the things that's happening, we've got a prominence that we've never seen before.
Yeah.
And Sarah, now our real concern is, why would we allow ourselves to stumble at this recognition hurdle just because we haven't got our shoelaces tied?
Sure.
Why aren't we tying our shoelaces whilst we are coming to increasing prominence? Because if we don't, someone else will go over that hurdle before us.
Absolutely. No, it's music to my ears and a brilliant place for me to finally stop asking questions. And thank you so much for coming. Either of you got any final thoughts on anything we feel that we've not touched? Or
no, we just welcome this opportunity to really be able to come and put our thoughts with you. And thank you very much indeed.
No problem at all.
And come along and just do it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm really looking forward to engaging further with you in the future and having all of those things that you've described put under all of our systems and also for us to get your teeth into the manifesto for reform, for us to make sure that it ends up being robust in every which way, and that the suggestions being made aren't done so clumsily or haphazardly. Let's try and move us in the right direction and truly reform what we're talking about for the better in every which way. So I really do appreciate your time today. Where do people find out more about you and the work you do?
Well, we're called Physiotherapy Audit Limited. My name is Pal, and we have a website,
www.palphysioadvisors.co.uk.
Brilliant, that's great. And I think that you are also, under that name, available across social media.
We are. We're on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn.
We will be linking to all of that, as well as all the documents that have been mentioned. We will put into the show notes and send you all these out onto the newsletter, which you'll find at choosehealth.co.uk. So sign up for the newsletter there, and we'll send you all those resources through. Keep an eye out, of course, for the Manifesto Reform, and meet Sandra and Sarah at the Big R's Conference, Reforming MSK Practice 2019, in which is going to be the manifesto launch, but also then a great CPD conference, including scrutiny of all these policies that we're describing before. So join there, buytickets.at/reformingMSK for tickets to that, and we'll see you there.
You've been listening to the Health Matters podcast.
Discussing health matters.
Because health
matters.